Thank you, everyone. So I'm glad to see that all of you have found the chat box. So as we are going through today's presentation, if you have any questions for us, please type them into the questions module on your screen. And we will try to stop for some of the questions as we're going along. And if the question is for someone specific, if it's for me or for Noah, or for our alum that's joined us today, Michael, please indicate that in your question. If we don't get to your question, you know, right away as you type it in, then we will answer it at the end of the presentation. So why don't we get started? So good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this webinar today. We offer an ongoing series of webinars throughout the competition cycle on a variety of topics, and today's presentation is going to focus on opportunities to Israel for U.S. academics and professionals beginning in the 1920 academic year. My name is Caitlin, and I manage the outreach and recruitment for the Fulbright program in the Middle East and North Africa region at IIE, and I will be walking us all through the session today, and I am joined by my colleague, Noah Tergman, who's joined us from the United States Israel Foundation. Hi, Noah.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Caitlin.
Okay. So before we continue, I want to note that we are going to be talking about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program today. So that sends American professors, professionals, and postdocs overseas to conduct research or to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So experience and a terminal degree are required for this program. So if you are an undergraduate or a young professional that is looking for opportunities to teach English or to get your master's degree in Israel, this is not the correct webinar for you. I actually discussed that program, which is the Fulbright U.S. student program, during a webinar yesterday, and I would be happy to share the link to the recording of that presentation with anyone that is interested. I will also not be talking about inbound programs bringing Israelis to the U.S. That is the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program, or the Visiting Student Program. And if you're interested in that side of the program, you can reach out to Noah after the webinar, and she'd be happy to give you more information. I'll start today with a brief introduction of the Fulbright Scholar Program, and then spend a good chunk of our time discussing points related to opportunities that are available in Israel for the 1920 academic year. I'm going to touch upon the application process and share some tips for putting together a competitive application. And Noah is going to be talking about the foundation's priorities, the financial contribution required for host institution, and award benefits. And today we are also joined by a current Fulbrighter, Michael Wine, who will speak about his experience as a postdoc at Ben-Gurion University towards the end of our time today. And like I said, we'll try and answer as many of your questions as we can during the webinar, but we'll also have a Q&A session at the end. Okay, let's get started.
Okay, thank you, Caitlin.
So the Fulbright program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. In addition to being the longest-serving chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Fulbright also supported creating a National Center for the Arts, and his initial legislation led to the founding of the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. He had a profound influence on America's foreign policy, and his vision for mutual understanding shaped the exchange program that bears his name. Having had his own exchange experience abroad as a Rhodes Scholar, Fulbright was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange for fostering mutual understanding. Senator Fulbright actually used proceeds from the selling of surplus U.S. government war property to fund the program at its outset. So this was in the aftermath of the Second World War and around the time of the establishment of the UN. So at that crucial time, the Fulbright program was an attempt to promote peace and understanding through educational exchange. And Senator Fulbright had a lot of quotable moments, but one of my favorites is something that he said on the 30th anniversary of the Fulbright program back in the late 1970s, which was, "International educational exchange is the most significant current project designed to continue the process of humanizing mankind to the point we would hope that men can learn to live in peace eventually even to cooperate in constructive activities rather than compete in a mindless contest of mutual destruction. We must try to expand the boundaries of human wisdom, empathy, and perception, and there is no way of doing that except through education. That's pretty good, right? The Fulbright Program remains the flagship international exchange program of the U.S. government and designed to increase mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and the people of other nations. It is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it is administered in close collaboration with the Institute of International Education, which is the organization I work for. We are a cooperating agency. And it is also administered alongside U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions overseas. And in Israel, we do have a Fulbright commission, which is what Noah is representing today. The program operates in more than 160 countries, and its alumni include approximately 80 Pulitzer Prize and over 50 Nobel Prize winners. Several Fulbright Israel alumni are included in that number. Aharon Tehanover won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 2004, and he was an Israeli Fulbright scholar at MIT in the 1980s. Felix Bloch, he was an American physicist. He won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1952, and he was actually an American Fulbright scholar to Israel. And the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, Philip Schultz, was a Fulbrighter to Israel in the 1980s. And we also have had two Fulbright alumni that either came from Israel or went to Israel that have received MacArthur Genius Grants. So that is all to say that receiving a Fulbright Award to Israel would put you in very esteemed company. Before we discuss Israel in more detail, I want to review the basic eligibility requirements for Fulbright U.S. Scholar Awards. Regulations for all Fulbright scholars were created and revised by the President J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. At the top of application, there are several eligibility requirements that must be met. U.S. citizenship is required. Permanent resident status is not sufficient. Like I said earlier in the presentation, if you are an Israeli citizen looking for opportunities to come to the U.S., this is not the presentation that will go over that program. A PhD or other professional or terminal degree may be required depending on the award. And for Israel, this is the case. For professionals and artists, recognized professional standing and substantial professional accomplishments are required in lieu of a terminal degree. I also want to mention that there are new policies that govern eligibility as it relates to previous Fulbright U.S. Scholar Grants. If you have had a U.S. Scholar, not a student, but a Scholar Grant within the past 2 years, you'll need to review these policies or get in touch with us to ensure that you are eligible to apply this round. But essentially, there is a two-year waiting period between the time your previous grant ended and when you are eligible to apply again. So why should you do your Fulbright in Israel? Israel is a top destination for U.S. scholars to conduct teaching and research activities in a vast variety of fields. Any accredited institution of higher ed may serve as a host, so the range of opportunities is very broad. And as many of you know, Israel is home to some of the finest universities in the world. Israel is also a country of just immense natural beauty, world-class culture, history, food. I could go on and on, but suffice to say that Israel is a really lovely place to live. I'm sure Noah would agree.
Can I just also say, if it's okay for me just bumping into not my slide, that Israel was... is mentioned as a startup nation, and it is one of the leading places for innovation and excellence, and it's really an island of diversity and opportunities. So in that sense, it's a very unique place.
Yeah, thanks for that, Noah. So Fulbrighters in Israel benefit from immense support from the Fulbright Commission, which Noah will talk about more later in the presentation. Noah, I'm going to mute you for a second because it sounds like there's some noise.
Yeah, sorry. So please mute me. Okay.
Sorry about that, everyone. So Noah's going to talk a little bit about the Fulbright Commission later in the presentation. But there is a high potential to make a lasting relationship with your host institution. Many previous scholars often will continue their relationships with their hosts and sometimes even invite scholars from that institution to lecture at their home institution in the U.S. As the Fulbright Program aims to promote mutual understanding between the U.S. and people of other countries, applicants with little or no experience in Israel are encouraged to apply, and we'll find that Israel is a very welcoming place. One perception is that opportunities in Israel are limited to those who speak Hebrew fluently or that have extensive ties to the country, and that is not the case. The Fulbright Commission is especially interested in encouraging scholars and professionals who may not have had any exposure to the country who wish to forge new connections and networks. But if you do happen to have a lot of connections or experience in Israel, you are absolutely still welcome to apply, and we are excited to look at your applications. So in terms of language requirements, a knowledge of Hebrew or Arabic is helpful, but it's absolutely not required. So this year's awards are divided into two categories, and that is the Senior Scholar All-Discipline Fellowship, and then we have a category for Postdoctoral Fellowships. And the Fulbright Commission in Israel is hoping to award approximately 8 grants in each category, so 8 postdocs and 8 senior scholars. And if Noah has any changes to that, I'll unmute her when we get to her slide in a second, and she can talk about that. So the Israeli academic year typically runs from mid to late October through June or July, and there are a lot of short breaks for holidays. So therefore, awards to Israel for the 1920 academic year will generally start between October of 2019 and February of 2020, which is when the second semester would start. But there is some flexibility, so contact Noah if you have any questions about your start date. So now I'm going to unmute Noah and hand it off to her, and she is going to go into more details about the Fulbright Commission in Israel. I'm going to try to unmute. Oh, she is self-muted. There we go. She is unmuted. Why don't you go ahead, Noah?
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, so I'm happy to introduce the Israeli Fulbright Commission. It was established in 1956 by an agreement signed by both countries, by both governments. So we celebrated our 60th anniversary 2 years ago. And our offices are located in Tel Aviv, but we have scholars throughout the country. We are like Senator Fulbright's vision and hope, we are working very hard at promoting the mutual understanding between the people of the United States and Israel. And we are here as an administrative, but also a welcoming force for the scholars that arrive here. We run many, I'm going to speak just about the programs for the scholars. So can we look at the next slide? Okay, so Fulbright believes in innovation, excellence, and leadership, and those are the criteria that we're looking for in our candidates. Academic excellence, leadership capabilities, and really proving us that you are interested in not just coming and learning here, but also keeping the relationship with the scholars that you'll meet here. And I can say that many of our scholars come back to Israel with different programs and maintain a sustainable relationship. Can we look at the next slide? Okay, so other than the grant, other than the fellowship that scholars receive, we are also offering cultural and academic events throughout the year. We're helping with networking with the local community. We are asking the scholars to engage in lectures and public screening, speaking, and sort beyond what they have to do within their post here. We have a thriving alumni network of 60 years of Fulbrighters here in Israel and the U.S., and we're working very hard on making sure that the new grantees will be part of it. And, of course, if there's a problem, we are here to help. We are in very good relationship with the local embassy and with the cultural affairs attaché, and we're here for the scholar. Let's look at the next slide.
Okay, so thanks, Noah. Now on to the awards. To start, there are up to 8 fellowships available for senior scholars. For this award, you would need to be an assistant professor or higher to be considered a senior scholar. But additionally, the award welcomes applications from senior professionals or accomplished artists or writers. I see that there are a couple of questions in the inbox here about whether, you know, if you are a professional that does not have a graduate degree, but if you have significant experience, would you be eligible? And the answer to that question is yes. If you have, so we're looking for more like seasoned, experienced professionals and artists. So if you are, you know, maybe 5 years out of your undergraduate degree, then maybe not necessarily, then the student program would be a better fit for you. But if you have been in your career for a number of years, then the Senior Scholar Award would be something that you would be eligible for. So the program is open to all fields of study, and scholars' proposed activities might include research, lecturing, or a combination of lecturing and research. The grant is 4 months in length, and it is important to note that shorter or longer grant lengths will not be considered. It does need to be a 4-month-long grant. A letter of invitation from an accredited Israeli institution of higher education is required at the time of application. So each candidate should try to arrange his or her institutional affiliation in Israel independently, including the development of your program work and for the proposed visit through any contacts you have with possible institutions. I will offer some advice on letters of invitation later in the presentation, so we will come back to that. And then per policy that has been established by the Fulbright Commission in Israel, candidates should take into account that host institutions are going to be obligated to make a financial contribution of $2,000 to the foundation, which would be credited towards your overall grant benefits. And so Noah's going to go into greater detail about that requirement in a couple of slides, but I just wanted to mention that. So let's move on to the postdocs. Okay, so the Fulbright Commission in Israel plans to award 8 grants to U.S. postdoctoral scholars who seek to pursue research at an Israeli institution of higher education. And so these are unique and very prestigious grants, and they're open to researchers in all academic disciplines. And they would support programs for up to 20 months, so that would be between either 1 or 2 academic years. I would not advise anything shorter than 1 academic year, but it really depends on your situation. So, but 1 academic year or 2 academic years, and if it's any other time other than that, then just check with us, and we want to make sure that it's something that the commission is interested in. So an expression of interest from a host institution is required for this award, and that would typically take the form of acceptance into the institution's, you know, standard postdoctoral fellowship program if they have one. If they don't have one, that's fine, but again, you'll want to just check with us to make sure that it is appropriate for this award. So according to Israeli regulations, a researcher can be defined as a postdoctoral fellow for a period of 5 years, beginning from the date that you would have received your doctorate. So to be eligible for this fellowship, which begins in the fall of 2019, you must have received your PhD degree no earlier than April of 2016 in order to remain eligible for the duration of the grant. So individuals who have already begun postdoctoral research activities in Israel prior to this academic year, to 1920, would not be eligible for this award, as well holders of tenure track positions are not eligible to apply. Given the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding, in addition to describing the research plan, candidates should be giving a concise description of their broader goals of their experience in Israel. So, you know, this is to address, you know, what would you like to learn about Israel? What other activities, other than your research, do you expect to participate in to sort of further the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding? And then also, how do you expect to share your experiences when you return to the U.S.? Those are all things that we want to see in your project statement if you're applying for a postdoc. Like the Senior Scholar Award, there is a financial commitment that must be met by the host institution. So your host will be asked to provide you with a grant no smaller than whatever their standard institutional postdoc award is, a description of which should be included in the letter of invitation that they send to you. And so now I'm going to hand it back off to Noah, and she is going to talk about a new postdoctoral fellowship opportunities for those in the field of Israel studies, and then she's going to provide more details about the financial commitment. Okay, it looks like Noah has muted herself. We'll wait for her to come back. Okay, well, while we're waiting for Noah to unmute herself, I can sort of start on this slide. So this is a new postdoc fellowship. We did offer it last year, but we introduced it sort of late in the season. And so this would be only one grant, and it's similar in structure to the, you know, all disciplines postdoc that I already talked about. But this would be looking specifically for a scholar that is seeking to pursue research in the field of Israel studies and someone that's interested in pursuing a career in Israel studies in the U.S. after they finish their postdoc. So individuals who have already begun postdoc activities in Israel prior to the 1920 academic year, similar to the last postdoc, are not eligible. And similarly for this degree, you will also need to be accepted into a postdoctoral program, have a letter of invitation. A PhD is required for this award, and it is the same requirement that applies to the last one. If you cannot have received your PhD earlier than April 2016 in order to be eligible. Okay, it looks like Noah is back. Noah, do you want to comment at all on this new research opportunity?
Yes, just to say that this is a collaboration between Fulbright and the Israel Institute, and that we're going to talk about funding in a while, but this grant is bigger and larger than the other grants.
Okay. All right, so do you want to go ahead now and talk about the financial commitment, Noah?
Yes, okay, so for the postdoc, for the postdoc fellowships, the university should have offer the scholar a standard postdoctoral grant at the host institution. I invite you to check with me. I'm available on email constantly to kind of like unveil what does this mean. It changes from university to university, from institution to institution. I can say that, for example, at Bar-Ilan University, there's an agreement where they have funds available for Fulbright scholars. And the commitment is already there, but all Israeli institutions, including the art school in Jerusalem, Bezalel, are very, very interested in hosting Fulbright scholars. Again, I urge you and I invite you to email me with any question regarding the commitment from the institution. The Senior Scholars is, of course, a smaller commitment of $2,000 per university. Again, my email, I'm available. Let me know if you have any question regarding that commitment.
Okay, thanks, Noah. So we have So I see that there's a question here. Is the financial commitment applicable to the non-institution scholars, or is it then out of pocket for independent professional applicants? So is it actually a financial commitment that you would be putting up? It would be your host institution. And all of these awards are requiring that you partner with a host institution and have a letter of invitation from them. So that is something that you would need to raise with your host, regardless of whether you are an affiliated or non-affiliated scholar. You will need to have a host in Israel, and that host will need to have agreed to the financial commitment. Let's see. And I have a question here about sharing our emails. When we get to the final slide for our live Q&A session, both of our email addresses will be listed on the screen. So that's coming up shortly. And let's see. So I'm seeing a lot of questions here about how many applicants do you receive for these awards. So it is the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board policy is not to discuss application numbers. We cannot discuss the number of applications that we receive. That said, Israel is a pretty competitive country, particularly for the Senior Scholar Award. And if you're interested in seeing what some of the previous grantees have done in Israel, a little bit later I will show you guys the Fulbright Scholar Directory so that you can kind of see who has been selected and to do what in the past. So it says another question, who does the $2,000 go to? So the $2,000 goes to the Fulbright Commission in Israel, but that money is credited towards your grant. So ultimately, the money ends up supporting you. Is that correct, Noah?
Yes, that's right. It's just a commitment from the institution. In that sense, it's the two institutions, Fulbright and the hosting university, are putting money into the grant.
Yeah, and my understanding is that the reason that this financial commitment exists is because, the Fulbright Commission in Israel wants to see that these hosts are not just, having someone on their campus to do work for them. They want to see that the institution is committed to being, an outstanding host and providing resources for you.
Exactly.
So this is intended to weed out any organizations that, may not be able to provide an adequate level of support, not just financially, but in terms of a genuine interest and commitment to including you in their episode. Okay. So you can see a sampling of project titles from the last couple of years for selected U.S. Scholar projects. These grants are carried out through activities that include lecturing, research, but might also add dimensions beyond the typical notion of standing in front of a class or sitting in a lab. They take place across the country in a range of different kinds of institutions. So you can take a look at the Fulbright Scholar Directory to see where scholars have been across Israel over the past several years. And you will see that there are a few hundred U.S. scholars alone. But both IIE and the Fulbright Commission in Israel are able to provide information on seeking affiliations and encourage applicants with difficulties arranging hosts to contact us. So I'm going to quickly show you guys the Fulbright Scholar Directory. So follow me. Is everyone seeing me going? Let's see. I'm opening the link. If you are able to see this. Noah, are you seeing this on your end?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So this is our Fulbright Scholar Directory. And if you go into our advanced filter, so first you'll want to look at U.S. scholars within the core program. So these are some of our other sort of satellite programs, but you'll want to look at the core program, and you can choose the country. So you can look at Israel, and if you just click search, depending on your Wi-Fi speed, okay, so it'll pop up, and you can see that these are all of the Fulbright scholars that have gone to Israel, and I think this catalog goes back to 2010, so we have a large number of applicants in here, of not applicants, but grantees in here. So as you're kind of going through and thinking about host institutions, if you're coming up against a wall and you're not sure where to start, there are so many universities in Israel. If you don't know where to start, taking a look at this list will show you historically where Fulbrighters have gone in Israel. So this will give you a good jumping off point that, you know, you might want to take a look at University of Haifa, because University of Haifa has hosted a lot. So if Tel Aviv University, Hebrew University, all the universities on this list have hosted Fulbrighters before. And then, you know, if you don't happen to have connections at that institution, what you can do, particularly if someone is in a similar discipline to you, so say, for example, that you are in literature and you are interested in Hebrew University of Jerusalem, you could click on Gaitan's profile, and I actually know this grantee. He's a very, a really great person, and as most of our alumni will tell you, they're very happy to help people that are applying for Fulbrights. They want to see more people participate in this program. And so if you wanted to reach out to Gaitan, you could send him an email and say, I saw that, you know, in the scholar directory that you did this project. Would you be willing to put me in touch with your contacts at Hebrew University? And that's a, you know, that is a good way to get started on getting that letter of invitation. So that's a little pro tip for you there. Okay. Great. So back to the presentation. So I showed you a little bit about that. So there are a couple of other different strategies. So the earlier you start, the better. And remember that correspondence might seem slow, so don't be discouraged. But start on, you can also start on your campus. I'm talking to your colleagues, and you can ask them if they have any connections in the region that they can share with you. You can also peruse the Israeli Council of Higher Education website, which is it's actually linked in all of the award descriptions for Israel. But that site has a long list of possible institutions. I already showed you guys the U.S. Scholar Directory, and our Fulbright alumni are usually excited and eager to help with the process. But also, you know, Google is your best friend. Looking at the university websites in Israel and locating information for different departments is something that you can pretty easily do with a, you know, within just a couple of keystrokes. I do not personally keep the names or contact information of people at specific host institutions. So this part is going to require, you know, some legwork and some ingenuity on your part. But if you are really stuck and you cannot find a suitable host after exhausting all of these strategies, then you can reach out to me or to Noah. Specifically Noah might be able to make a more targeted recommendation. Okay, so you can see the application components here. Instead of going through every required piece, I'm going to focus on how to submit a competitive application. I'm sorry, I lost my place here. So if you have specific questions about the application, you can find a lot of guidance on our website. But I'd also like to just quickly announce that I am going to be hosting an application walkthrough and advising session on June 14th. So that session is going to be designed specifically for applicants to Israel and to the NEA region. And that session is going to answer your questions about the application process. Limited spots are available for that webinar, so if you're interested, you'll need to reach out to me, and my email will be listed at the end of the slides. Okay, so Fulbright is a competitive program, particularly in Israel, and therefore your proposal is going to need to be three things: clear, concise, and compelling. Each individual's application should be about the candidate, how the grant time is going to be spent, and what outcomes can reasonably be expected. For the project statement, so that is a brief self-introduction to reviewers and an opportunity to provide answers to any questions the reviewers might have about you or about your about your project. So what you'll want to talk about, you know, why are you interested in the Fulbright Award and why Israel? You know, there are many grants that you could be applying to. What we want to know is why Fulbright, and how does your project help promote our goal of encouraging mutual understanding. We also would like to hear from you about what professional experiences and skills that you are able to offer your host institution. That is not to say that you want to completely just list off your CV. You will be including a CV in your application. So that will be covering a lot of your experiences, but what you really want to do in the project statement is dig into how those experiences have prepared you for this grant and, how flexible you are, adaptable you are. You may find that when you get into the host country that, things might change. You go in with a specific idea and then, someone that you're trying to work with is not available or whatever happens, it does happen on Fulbright grants. But we want to know that you'll be able to sort of hit the ground running when you get there, and that if something might happen to sort of change the trajectory of your project, that you are going to be able to handle that with no problems. So you'll really want to focus on what you plan to do and not just reciting your resume. The project statement is 3 to 5 pages. And you'll see on our website that the page limits are all listed. And those are listed, because they are hard limits. And if you do happen to go over those page limits, you'll have to hear from us and we'll ask you to shorten your application. So really do please pay attention to the page limits because they are hard limits. So for your references, while it's helpful to have someone with, a reputation in the field, the best criteria is going to be someone who knows you and your work extensively. And I always advise to sort of mix internal and external letters to demonstrate that you have, to demonstrate your breadth of your projects. For a letter of invitation, as I noted earlier, invitation letters required for postdocs and for senior scholars. But a strong letter is something that's going to demonstrate the host's interest in you and in your project. It'll explain sort of the duration of your stay. It should be welcoming. It doesn't obligate the institution to any financial for Israel, it does obligate them to a financial commitment, but it should be more of a commitment to host you and to offer support that is needed for your project if you're selected. That's really what we want to see in those letters. So I see that there are a lot of questions here about previous experience in Israel or if you're brand new to Israel. Both are fine and both can be framed as strengths. So applicants without significant experience are absolutely encouraged to apply. Talk about any new connections that you are hoping to make on your grant. But if you have spent time in Israel or even if you are a dual citizen, that would not impact your eligibility for these awards. And, that may mean that you have, deep connections in the host country, that, because of these connections or because of your language skills or your cultural experience that you would be able to, more successfully complete a grant. So that's sort of an argument that you'll want to make if you have had previous experience in Israel. Okay. Okay, so here we have a helpful overview of the timeline. So after you submit your application on August 1st, or hopefully before then, the program staff at IIE will review your application and make sure all the pieces are there and that you don't go over any page limits. So like I said, if you go over the page limits, you might hear from us to cut down your 40-page CV into 6 pages. So please make sure that you're complying with that and the other parameters of the award defined in the award description. So we will be also checking to make sure, for example, if you're applying for a Fulbright Senior Scholar Award, that you are proposing a grant that's 4 months long. If you propose something that's 2 months or 9 months, you'll hear from us and we will be asking you to adjust your project accordingly. So that takes place in August. It'll usually be the entire month of August because we will be reviewing all applications, not just to Israel, but of course to all the other Fulbright countries that we are active in. And then after that point in September, your application will be reviewed by a scholar in your field, and they will be offering their comments on the merits of your project so that the next round of reviewers, the regional reviewers, have some context about where your project fits in the overall trajectory of your field. The regional reviewers meet in person in Washington, D.C., and that's usually in October, sometimes in November. But they meet in D.C. to discuss every application. So these reviewers are former Fulbrighters that may have gone to Israel or another country in a region, so they will have regional expertise. They may not, however, be in your field. So we might see a poet reviewing a physics application. So that's why we have the discipline review beforehand. But keep this in mind because you'll want to make sure that you're avoiding too much technical jargon that will make your project difficult to grasp for someone outside of your field. I call this the Neil deGrasse Tyson approach. You need to sound like an expert, but you also need to make your topic approachable and interesting to someone with little or no background in your field. So these reviewers will be making the decision about whether your application will go overseas to be reviewed in the host country. At this point, which will usually be in late November, I think last year it was after the Thanksgiving break, at that point you'll hear from us about whether you made it through this sort of first round of reviews. And then your application lands on NOAA's desk, and they make decisions about which projects they want to fund. NOAA, do you want to talk a little bit about what that process looks like in Israel?
Of course. Where I'm not deciding. We have, every year, we are sending the applications to commissions, Fulbright alumni and local scholars who review the applications, and then we have a commission here at our offices choosing the 8 happy and lucky grantees from each scholarship, and we also choose alternates in case not all grantees end up accepting the award. So we also have a list of alternates that, like for example, this year we did have a case where we had to, one of our grantees declined the grant, the fellowship, and then we had one of our alternates receive it. What we're looking for, I will just repeat Caitlin's words. We're looking again for connection. It does not need to have a connection to Israel, a connection to the host professor, to the department, a true desire to come and research specifically here. Again, not because of history or geography necessarily, but because of a connection between your research as a scholar and the scholars who are researching here. We are looking for innovation, we are looking for excellence, and we are looking really for the brightest scholars that will eventually go back to Israel in the case of, to the U.S. in the case of the postdoc, and will lead a successful career. In the senior scholar's case, we are looking for a scholar that will enrich his career and the department that he's going to be researching or teaching at.
All right, thanks, Noah. So after the commission makes these selections, you'll hear again from us whether you were selected for the grant. Israel tends to get back to us much sooner than other countries, which we love. Thank you, Noah. And this is typically early in the spring, in March or April. So from there, you know, if you're selected, you'll get all registered in our digital system. You'll submit a bunch of paperwork, and then you will go off on your merry way to Israel in the fall of 2019 or the spring of 2020. So from start to finish, assuming that you're starting your application as soon as you log off from this webinar, you are looking about a year until you would find out if you've been selected for a grant, and then about a year and a half until you would actually be going off. Okay. So now on to the main event. We are thrilled to have current Fulbrighter, Michael Wine. He's actually joining us from Israel, and he is going to be talking about his experience as a postdoc at Ben-Gurion University, and his project is titled, What is Desiccating the Galilee Sea? Thank you for joining us, Michael. I am going to unmute you here, and I'll let you take it.
Hi, thanks a lot, Caitlin and Noah, for your informative presentations. So I've been given the very difficult task of telling you all about my Fulbright experience in 10 minutes. So I'll try my best. So basically, it started when a fellow named Yoni Laron was invited by my then PhD supervisor to New Mexico Tech to do some funded research at New Mexico Tech. So he was at New Mexico Tech for 3 months, and we developed a relationship. He ended up inviting me over for his wife's wonderful Italian cooking every week, and ultimately we talked about the possibility of doing a postdoc in Israel. And I also was interested in understanding if academia was really for me or not. From a cultural perspective, I had lived in Israel for a year after high school. I had this hobby of speaking Hebrew for decades now. And I have friends and relatives in Israel. And so I was very excited to go back on the one hand. On the other hand, I need to note that the incoming Fulbrighters to Israel are very diverse religiously, culturally. And personally, being from New York City, I really appreciate the diversity of my cohort of Fulbrighters in Israel. In terms of host country, choosing host country, country, institution, and collaborators, I always wanted to visit Israel again since I spent a year there in high school. I had this close personal relationship with Yoni, a professor at Ben-Gurion, and so that was the host institution I ended up choosing. It's a very popular institution. His research there is very large, very active, and the members in his group have turned out to be really wonderful people. And so also there are benefits to living in Be'er Sheva. There's a relatively low cost of living there, and it's not overrun by English-speaking tourists. So you get really an immersive experience. In terms of host collaborators, I initially had chosen a different collaborator, and after I was awarded the Fulbright, we tried to work out some details, and it became clear that the fit just wasn't good. And so I went through this process of trying to switch collaborators, and ultimately I switched to Yoni. He had funding, he's published in Nature, he has this large, great research group, there were lots of potential synergies, and over the course of several hours, we wrote this bilateral agreement with all of my commitments to his group and his commitments to me, even down to details of CPU speeds for my computer and a solid-state drive. And very importantly, he was encouraging to collaborate not only with his network, but also outside of his network if needed. In terms of an overview of my project, So my first task was to meet with local stakeholders to clarify my objectives. I had formulated my proposal from Web of Knowledge, Web of Science, from many miles away, and on the basis of those meetings, we were able to really fine tune our research objective to looking at the relative importance of climate change versus anthropogenic influences on the Galilee Sea drying up, which is what's happening. And basically, to just cut to the chase, climate change impacts are fairly minor relative to agriculture and water diversion activities, which are the primary drivers desiccating the Galilee Sea. So I worked with Alon Reimer at the Canary Limnological Lab. I'll talk more about him in a moment. Yoni, I worked with Yoni, and I worked with his group. His group was great in terms of helping me contact other people, and most importantly, in terms of keeping me honest. I also tried to involve the Israel Water Authority, but they were less interested in my project for various reasons. So in terms, having said that, up to this point, and I'm sure into the future, my research experience here has been excellent, and I'm very happy I made the decision. In terms of the experience in Israel, it's also been excellent, also with as many exclamation points as you care to put on the word. And so regularly we've been invited to spend weekends and holidays all over the country. The hospitality is amazing. Everyone's very friendly. If you want to sum it up, think of all the bad news you hear about Israel, and our experience here has been exactly the opposite. Their Russian grandmothers are providing parenting advice, babies feeding each other on the playground. They feed each other bamba. The food is excellent. I feel that the coexistence is great between Jews, Arabs, and minorities. As an anecdote, on the public buses, there are people from all religions, all ethnicities, making funny faces and mouth noises at our one-year-old baby, toddler now. So, and then I personally, I, despite what you might hear on the news or in other venues, I personally I feel that society is totally integrated with all the ethnicities present at the certainly at Ben-Gurion University where I am, also at the cafes, on buses, and even at baby swim lessons. In terms of challenges that we faced, so far we haven't come across any insurmountable challenges. Fulbright is definitely there to help out if needed. And challenges, by the way, are what make us stronger and more confident. But there have been some challenges. So there are family and friends who thought that leaving the U.S. or going to Israel in particular for a 20-month period especially was a bad idea, that we're stealing their baby. The parents on both sides ultimately planned to visit and or already have visited, had a great time. And another challenge, it's hard to visit the U.S. on the one hand, but on the other hand, my wife actually and our daughter actually make it back for 2 weeks every 2 months up to this point. So they're actually back with the stateside family quite a bit. Another challenge was my wife ended up giving up a high-earning permanent position to pursue a lower-earning 20-month postdoc. It wasn't an easy decision, but her coworkers love her and would be thrilled to give her back her job on the flip side. Another challenge that's on a much sadder note is that Dr. Alon Riemer passed away this past week. He was one of my key collaborators outside of Yoni and really was an inspiration for my project. He had cancer, and I now understand that the reason he didn't agree to work with me personally or take me on personally as a postdoc was because he would not be alive for most of the grant duration. Despite this loss, with Fulbright funding in place and support from Yoni, there's no problem to seek additional collaborators if we need to. Another challenge has been the Water Authority's lack of interest in collaborating or providing certain data sets, but the flip side is it just causes us to initiate more creative thinking, which is fine. Israel is a very strong, small country, so you may find that everyone has an opinion about everyone else, and they're not shy about sharing it with you. I think it's very important to, on the one hand, listen to these opinions and see if any of them pile up, and on the other hand, to form one's own opinion about with whom one wishes to work or not. Another challenge was the local geopolitics. I visited Jordan with my sister, and it turns out the Arab countries have a long memory. President Trump's decision about Jerusalem is an example. It's still they're still very sore about this in Jordan. Even outside of that issue, at one point my sister and I sat down with two people in Jordan. They invited us for tea, and when they heard that we came over from Israel, one of them just got up and left. So the local geopolitics is a little bit challenging. the other guy who didn't get up and left then started asking me about my specific activities in Israel. And I ended up, I had worn a Ben-Gurion sweatshirt for no particular reason. I wasn't trying to make any statement. It was just on the top of the pile. And I ended up turning it inside out for the rest of my trip to Jordan. So the local geopolitics are what they are. But I think it's also good to experience them. In Israel, being abroad, I guess, everything takes a little longer. By the way, Israeli citizens have certain peculiar privileges. For example, only people with Israeli ID numbers can use the self-checkout. Everyone else is stuck waiting for a cashier. And the list is kind of long, that's just one example. It's probably safe to assume that the entire first month can be dedicated to getting settled, particularly if you're coming with a full family and you're staying for 20 months. In terms of the impact upon returning home, I've collaborated locally with master's students, PhD students, where the interests overlap. I've helped with experimental design, technical implementation, structuring papers, and modeling. In terms of impacts upon returning home, I guess the United States is a great place, but there's room for improvement. And spending time in Israel, we can see where that space is. So, for example, health insurance, we're currently saving $14,000 a year in health insurance by buying our $2 a day plan in Israel that covers per person, $2 a day per person, and it works great. Increased medications. happiness, I think it's well known. If you look at the list of happiness by country, Israel is happier than the United States. And if you spend time here, perhaps you'll try to start to get an understanding of why that is. To me, it's very clear why there are fewer domestic mass shootings or school shootings here in Israel than there are in the United States. From a scientific perspective, I think it's impossible to understand an environmental situation without understanding other environmental situations. And so being outside of my normal context, I find very helpful. Life expectancy is longer here. There are reasons for that as well. More than 2 years longer here than in the United States. The social services are better. You're hard-pressed, in my opinion, to find a homeless person in Israel. In New York, in Denver, in cities in California, it's very different. And then everyone always has wondered why there are barriers to peace in the Middle East. If you go to Jordan and you see that Israel is not on the map, then that gives you an idea of what the situation is. So in terms of tips for making connections abroad, there's no, as was said earlier, there's no substitute for starting early and developing strong personal relationships. In my case, mine was totally by accident. It's important to build confidence in that strong working relationship with the potential mentors. One of mine fell through. And generally, the faculty are very enthusiastic about working with a Fulbrighter. If you're interested, just don't hesitate to contact a potential host. Or contact someone in your discipline who got one of their degrees in Israel and ask who they worked with and how they enjoyed their experience. In terms of bringing along a dependent, I'm here with my wife and now 1-year-old. She was 6 months when we came. It's really important to find opportunities for the for one's dependents. My wife is here taking care of the 1-year-old. The Israelis love babies. She goes to group activities, baby swim lessons. The family sometimes regularly comes down for hummus lunch, which is, I think, for the three of us, it's about $20, less than $20 probably. And the hummus here is very good, by the way. In terms of dependents, there's also a discussion point for hosts. My host is very encouraging of getting back to the house fairly early in the afternoon to spend time with the kid. And also I have the flexibility to take off from work to help out with doctor's appointments and also get my own experience of the Israel's medical system as it applies to infants or toddlers. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you so much, Michael. There have been a couple of questions for you. So I wanted to quickly say this to you. So one of our questions says that I see some very adorable dependents on your slide. Could you address the support for a spouse or family for the Senior Scholar Award? Was there any change to your stipend or what other kinds of support do you have?
So I'm a postdoc. So for the postdoc, there's no adjustment to the stipend. There's no adjustment to the stipend from Fulbright, but there could be an adjustment from the host institution because that's something that you potentially can negotiate with your supervisors. With regard to senior scholars, I can't speak to that.
Noah, do you know the answer to that question?
Yes, I can speak to that. I'll just need to check at the website. There is a sliding, it's not a sliding scale, but there is a scale in the case of the senior scholars, the dependents do get an extra support. Let me just check for a second and I can read it from the website and answer, and you can check the website. So it's $4,500 a month unaccompanied grantees, $5,000 a month per month with one dependent $5,500 per month with two dependents and $6,000 per month with three or more dependents. So in that sense, it jumps by $500 per month per dependent for the senior scholars.
Great. Thanks so much for that, Noah. Okay, so I am going to move on to our next slide, which is just a, for the question and answer session. I'm going to have to move away from the adorable baby pictures and not to just where you can see that our contact information is here. And there have been a lot of you have been adding in questions as we've been going through. So we are going to, I know that we're a little bit over on time, but I want to make sure that we're able to get to some of the more substantial questions here. If it is something that is really specific about specific holds or specific, very specific to your project, it would be great if you could just write to the two email addresses on our screen and we'll have that conversation offline. But we had one question. Will the commission help me ask my host about the financial commitment? Is there some kind of email template, and how did Michael go about asking about the financial commitment? So if either you or Michael, Noah or Michael, want to talk about that.
Michael, could you go first?
Yeah, sure. So I initially, as I mentioned, I developed this, postdocs cost money. This is like a really good deal for these hosts. Assuming they're top-notch individuals, assuming they're bringing in grants, what's being offered to them is a top-notch individual with great English language skills, who's bringing mostly their own money. It's on their part, they should be viewing this as a really good thing. And on the one hand, on the other hand, it's very beneficial to them. On the other hand, it doesn't necessarily even cost them anything if you contact them early enough. That's more about contacting them early. They may ask you to bring in that additional contribution. One other comment I feel comfortable working with someone who's, let's put it this way, the institutions and the hosts really want Fulbrighters. So if, let's say that there's the 7,000 shekel obligation to, there's a 7,000 shekel obligation on their end, and very, very likely the host institution will kick in half of that. Then you're talking about a postdoc who costs them $1,000 a month, which is unheard of. It's a really good deal for them. So if they have even a little bit of money, they're even a little bit interested in working with you, they should be able to afford it.
Great, thanks, Michael.
And I can add to that. And thank you so much, Michael. What a beautiful presentation. It's really moving to hear you, and I think that's our number one quote-unquote concern, because our grantees don't want to leave. There's something really, no one wants to leave. People here from the ETA and the students all the way to postdoc and scholars are very, very happy staying here, both professionally. The level of academics in Israel is very, very high, and it meets some kind of cultural character that is very unique and that adds to innovation and thoughts about how to thinking out of the box, thinking differently. Add to that just great weather and very warm people, and that makes a beautiful salad that is very hard to leave. I think what Michael said, add to it the fact that Michael is here on a grant that is $20,000 per year with an addition from the host institution. This grant just came up to $35,000 a year, which is a major, major jump. And that kind of both is it is very good for the postdoc. In that sense, the Fulbright Israel postdoc grant is a very lucrative and special grant. I encourage you to contact the host institutions and ask them. Just ask them. Ask them to host you. Tell them why you want to research with them. And as Michael said, they want to have Fulbrighters here because they know the level of screening is very high. They know they will get Americans that bring knowledge from the U.S., and they really appreciate the manpower arriving. Again, we are here to assist and help. I think Michael's story is, in that sense, the story that we keep on hearing, where people meet people in conferences throughout the web with the mutual focus, and then they're happy to kind of like join forces and work together.
Great. Thanks for that. That's good to know. So a couple of other questions. So is this webinar being recorded? Will we have the opportunity to see it again later? Yes, we are recording this, and we will be posting a recording usually within 5 business days. So I would say check back maybe at the end of next week. If you'd like to, you know, share this webinar with your colleagues or rewatch it yourself, then that is something that you can do. Another question, can letters be from multiple institutions such as universities and hospitals? So I can sort of speak on the IIEN, and then Noah, if you want to comment. So we require that you're only able to submit one letter of invitation, and have sort of one main host. That doesn't preclude you from working with other organizations while you're in Israel. But you do want to have that one main institution be spending, you know, most of your time there to sort of facilitate those, you know, connections and relationships. If you're kind of bouncing all over the country, then, you know, you won't really be spending enough time in one place to, you know, be able to make a deep connection with your host. And then in terms of whether a hospital is an eligible host institution, I don't know what, Noah, can someone affiliate with a hospital?
Yes, of course. Most of Israel's hospitals, depends on which, but the one in Be'er Sheva, for example, Soroka, the one in Jerusalem, Hadassah, are academic hospitals. I mean, and that's just the training is done in the hospital. We have grantees who research in labs that reside in a hospital. So in that sense, every application will be reviewed to its content, but you could find a postdoc or a research opportunity within a hospital. Again, for specific questions, please feel free to email me, and I will kind of like check and make sure that this one will pass through the different selections.
Great. Another couple of questions about age limits or whether retired scholars are eligible to apply, and the answer to that is yes. You do not need to currently be employed at a university here in the U.S. or affiliated. We do welcome applications, you know, not only from, you know, professionals and those that have terminal degrees that are maybe not at a university, but they are out, you know, working in the real world. Not that the academy is in the real world, but you know what I mean. We are also very happy to accept applications from retired scholars as well. Okay, let's see. I know we're kind of over on time, but I want to get to just, one more question. Let's see, which one will be most applicable? We do have a question about the security in Israel. So I'm going to leave that to you, Noah. Can you sort of address, like, the security situation in Israel? And I think probably this person's more curious about, maybe not exactly Tel Aviv, but of Jerusalem.
Oh, this is, it is a relevant question, and I think Michael addressed it as well. Israel is a safe place, very safe. I have kids who go to school and go back home on their own, and they're 9 and 12. Israel is in the Middle East, and the Middle East gets a lot of news attention, and it is a place where wars and have happened before. Yet if you look at statistics and just plain numbers, it is safer than many other places, of course, in the Middle East, and even more safe than the U.S. I mean, if you look at the news in the last month and how many mass shootings and how many people died in tragic situations, unfortunately, the U.S. kind of like tops Israel in that. The daily life here is not just safe, but is also just very pleasant. You don't walk the street and feel threatened in any way. We have Fulbrighters here who reside in the north and reside in the south, and not just Tel Aviv and the center of Israel. I recommend you connect with Fulbrighters who have been here in the last years, and they could tell you how they feel. I recommend you kind of like try to screen beyond the kind of like top news and kind of like see and watch stuff about daily life here. I can say 100% it is a safe place.
Can I just jump in just for a second about Jerusalem?
Mm-hmm.
And I would definitely agree with Noah. In 2004, I lived in Jerusalem for several months, and I also felt it was safe. I would note that it's important to know the geography of Jerusalem. There's West Jerusalem and East Jerusalem, and I certainly would say that having been in New York, there were places that I didn't go in New York. Living in Albuquerque, New Mexico, there were places I didn't go, and just about any place I have lived, there are places that either you might not want to go or you might not want to go certain times of day. Certainly not just wandering around. There can be issues of dress. There are certain streets you would definitely not want to go. Walking around with a bikini in Jerusalem, but having said that, there's no general safety issue about Jerusalem.
Great. All right. Well, so we are a little over on our time, so we are going to end here. If we were not able to answer your question, please reach out to the emails here. This one, Middle East North Africa at IIE.org. That is me. Your question is really specific to the program or the application, how to put together an application, what the requirements are, please reach out to me. If you have specific questions about the financial commitment or about specific hosts in Israel, then Noah would be your best resource, and her email is Anyway, I'm going to be archiving this webinar in the next couple of days if you'd like to listen again. And a huge thank you to Michael for sharing his story.
Yes.
And pictures of his adorable baby and his beautiful wife. It was really, I think, valuable for everyone to hear what your experience has been like, because we can talk about what this program is like as much as we want, but your input is valuable, and people are really getting a sense of what the grant actually looks like. So we really appreciate that, Michael. And also thank you to Noah for representing the community, and it was great to work on this together. So on behalf of IIE and the Fulbright Commission in Israel, we just want to thank you for taking the time to join us today. And Noah and I both look forward to assisting you with your application. Have a great day, everyone.
Best of luck in that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I'm here for you. Please feel free to contact me.
Thank you for having me.